All right, we're recording.
All right, episode 43.
43.
AKA Chinga el Blue Team. Right?
Sí.
Chinga el Blue Team. With a with someone that is coming for a second time to the show, Ed Calderon. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me back on, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you something. I was trying to get Matt Fiddler as well and do like a four-way conversation here, but Matt is busy, and maybe we can do it again, just the four of us, and just have an awesome conversation. Wow.
That would be great, man. Matt is awesome. I know he's a busy guy too. It would be an amazing conversation having him all on there.
Cool. Yeah, no, absolutely. Awesome. So, Ed, anyone that doesn't know who you are, can you give us a 5-minute overview, who you are, where you've been, and what you've been doing ever since?
I was born and raised in Tijuana, Mexico. I worked for a bit over a decade doing camera narcotics, counter abduction, counter organized crime work, all along the northern Mexican border. I worked directly for the Mexican government. I did that during my 20s and, you know, part of my 30s. And things got, pretty interesting politically down there. A lot of ideas changed, and, yesterday's heroes are today's enemies type things. And I had to leave. Look for a better life and better options elsewhere. Moved up into the United States and went into the training community. And I've been doing classes all over the country dealing with counter abduction, teaching law enforcement about the cartels and how they operate. Teaching people how to stay safe in bad places and writing for a few publications as well. So I've been doing that ever since, and now I'm here with you guys.
Awesome, cool. So all the listeners and readers of the blog know that we've been trying to educate people about the what red teaming actually is, the virtues of becoming a bad guy, or rather mimicking a bad guy, and how that can help you become more resilient overall. On top of that, If you understand how things can go wrong, you can preemptively add controls and add ways to prevent that from happening. So, a couple episodes ago, we had Mark Mateski talk about the different levels of red teaming, and what he called level 4 is something that I never thought. I mean, I thought I was doing red teaming at the level that is, encompass everything. Whether it's a physical element or a social element or a digital element, and I thought I had it figured out, but it turns out there's something even a higher level of red teaming that if you look at it the way Mark Mateski is doing it, you begin to cascade from there downwards, and it makes total sense. It's the cultural part. It's where the ideas are coming from, where the mindset is coming, the original mindset is coming from. Where, for example, if you create a company, what was the original vision of the founders that end up percolating through the whole culture of the company? If it's a another type of organization, what was the mission, the original mission that end up percolating and creating the TTPs for that organization, right? And it got me thinking about what we discussed last episode, and I think it was episode 6, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was episode 6 or 5, so keep me honest here. But last time we spoke, you talked about really having to adapt to what the bad guys were doing in Mexico and how in doing so you managed to blending better. And it got me thinking, maybe we should bring you back again and start talking about culture. Start talking about how the cultural aspects of what you do, whether it's learning the hold on 1 second, episode 11?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm getting old. Episode 11, everyone. Episode 11 is the first episode with Ed. damn, you're doing it over time. Now I'm like...
The cultural aspects.
The cultural aspects. How the cultural aspects allows you to learn better your craft, blending better, and eventually, and essentially allows you to be a better version of what you are set to do, right? Am I making any sense at all? Because that got me in the middle.
There's a thing I like to call, you know, emulation, right? So when you're out there in the world and you have, for whatever reason, you know, an enemy of any kind, a nemesis, you know, this nemesis will always be, there's always a conversation going on between you and this nemesis or this enemy, whatever he is or she is or whatever the group is. And a lot of the conversation isn't just through actions that you each other, that you have against him and the enemy has against you. I think the conversation starts as soon as you start recognizing things within the enemy that, you know, that make you who he is. In my case, when I first got started, you know, I realized that the enemy that I had to deal with was an enemy that spoke my same language, that went to the same churches that I did, that had kind of the same upbringing, and a lot of the cultural elements that were present in my upbringing were present in his upbringing. But then, you know, there's a divergence that you see somewhere in the wiring. Maybe it's because of the region they were from, maybe because of a poor upbringing, or, you know, sometimes actually richer upbringing, because some of these criminals actually go from a higher echelon to the economy down here. But you recognize things like fashion choices, right? Fashion choices that some of these people have. And some of those fashion choices are because they're trying to emulate certain elements within the group that are, you know, the leadership. Or they're trying to advertise a certain lifestyle. You see fashion choices there. Sometimes, every now and then, some of those fashion choices will actually function. You see this with, there was a certain group out there that would wear safari jackets, those light safari jackets that were, I think the only time I ever seen them used was probably Israel. Israelis used those safari jackets instead of the vest for the concealed weapons, right? And I started seeing those light safari jackets in a certain part of Mexico being used by criminals. And, you know, I was scratching my head as far as why they were using those. And it turns out their leadership, the guy that was heading up their, you know, security, their criminal cell, used those jackets and had some prior training himself. So by knowing what the jacket is, where it comes from, why it's being worn, it basically marks your whole structure as far as who you see and why they are carrying that, and you can identify them in the public space if you know what you're looking for. So culturally, it's a fashion statement, you know, it's functional, and it's a thing you recognize, and you have to kind of do your homework. Sometimes people take things at face value, and they don't realize the entry behind most things that they look at. It's about being observant. It's about having the ability to research such a small thing like, why are all these people wearing silver instead of gold? what type of candles are they burning at the shrine where they're, you know, venerating whoever they're venerating? What does it mean when one element or one person in a group gets out of that group and calls privately in a phone conversation and comes back to that group? And other guys in that group receive a phone call and they speak openly in front of everybody else. What culturally, what does that mean, right? So all these small observations, you know, I wish I could tell you I learned all of them from the book, but it's really kind of, seeing things differently, not just seeing things for what they are, but kind of really asking yourself the question of why are things the way they are in this group of people? And if you see something more than once, there's a pattern there.
Right.
And if there's a pattern, there's probably a reason. So kind of learning what those reasons are. You know, you have to be a good researcher in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, Ed. Drawing kind of similarities to, you know, when you think about gangs, mm-hmm. you have the Crips and the Bloods, or just any gang in general, and they wear, you know, certain types of clothing, certain colors to kind of identify who they are. It's part fashion, but it's also part making the statement. And then, you know, thinking about that, I think a really good, I know you said, like, you wish you could have learned that through books. I think a lot of people, at least north of the border, were exposed to, like, that kind of stuff after, what was that TV show that came out? The Wire?
The Wire.
Where they talked about, like, how the different gang members were doing, you know, different things for certain reasons and what those patterns were and
right.
tracked the gang over time. And I thought that was really, really interesting. So I can see the connection there.
Yeah, there was also, it's a quote that I use in a presentation. It's a quote by one of the warlords one of the people that were captured, you know, when they were looking for, what's the name of the guy? Anyway, he says, you know, the Americans are so, they did this thing three times and we observed them and we knew exactly what the Americans were going to do. So we did it to them before they did it to us, right? They understand how things operated, the kind of equipment that we're using, the kind of TTPs that we're using, the how they acted and how they thought. They observed that three times and figure, hey, there's a pattern here, so we're gonna do it to them before they do it to us, right? Absolutely, patterns. Patterns is awesome.
If you can find, I was in a conversation with a few people from the certain group of SF guys in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to them about how you can recognize a pattern in what they do, all the way to collection and the type of people that work for these groups.
Yep.
Right? So I use it as an example. We were in a place in a public space, and there were a few of them there, and there were more coming. We're going to have this get together. Have a few beers and just, you know, kind of meet up before I got to show them a few things. And I told one of the guys there that I was going to pick everybody that would come through the door that was going to come over to our chair just because of the, you know, how he dressed and the legality. Right? And it's a pattern. Of course, if you have a bunch of individuals that are very specially trained for a very special purpose, you see this with tribal groups across the world, right? Especially when there's a warrior cap in these tribal groups. There's always marks or, you know, some of these have scarring, some of them have tribal symbols and stuff like that.
Right.
It's a Maasai, you know? They all carry the same weapon. There's certain fashion sense there. There's tattoos that identify them as warriors. And you would think that, you know, these special forces individuals are far removed from that, but they're the same in a lot of ways. You know, they're using the same brand names as far as clothing goes. You know, footwear is always kind of the same watches. They carry around a lot of their history on their skin, and that's pretty telling. And above all else, the way they develop their bodies is very specific to what they do. And that is a pattern that you can see. Now, seeing that from the outside, you know, you see these patterns in a group like that, and you identify them. And it's not in any way, shape, or form bad, you know, but it's definitely a thing that a lot of people on the bad guy side are always looking for, right? And the same things that they're going to do, you can see the criminal groups that kind of select their people from a young age, how they mark their bodies and how they kind of, some of them work out, some of them don't, you know, how they carry their weapons, you know, some of them have a sling on their rifle, some of them don't have a sling on their rifle, and what does that kind of tell you about them? There's these patterns that are going on. Again, there's always a communication going on, even if one of one of them isn't aware of it, but there's always a communication going on with how he look, how the defendant does, the equipment he carries, what kind of skin. And it's interesting how you can't avoid communicating something.
Right. So the first element of the four elements of red teaming is observe the patterns and essentially start learning, start doing the thing that will give you pretty much almost a guaranteed success is observing your target, observing how things are happening, how things are done, from a simple, you know, patterns of life to atmospherics to the cultural aspects to the technology aspects to everything. Because if you know, and again, I've never done undercover work, but I would assume, and correct me here if I'm wrong, but I would assume, and if you showed up with the wrong, not just clothing, but with the wrong technology, you're using a certain phone or a certain car or a certain piece of equipment that the people that you're trying to emulate or blend in with are not using, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb, right?
Yeah. I would have this test that I would do with some of the guys. Towards the end of my career, I was in charge of a selection. So every now and then, I would find people that I would, you know, think would be good to be able to blend into the environment. You know, and of course, there's always a difficult physical element. You know, there are things that we can't get rid of physically, right? If you have a guy that looks like he's a cop.
Right.
And it's hard to explain to people that aren't in the in the business what to look for when you say you look like a cop. It could be the haircut. It could be tattoos. It could be the body structure or how he's working out in a certain way. It could be as simple as having a wristwatch on, right? Culturally, in some places down here, having a wristwatch on means that you are a responsible person. that doesn't fit with criminality, right?
Right.
So that alone will get people to ask more questions. Having quality dentistry apparent in your mouth will get people to ask more questions about you in a lot of places. Not having a broken nose. Get people to ask more questions about you. Right? So there's a lot of small things that that go into the observation part of it that have a lot to do with I call it mirroring, right? So that's what we used to call it, mirroring. When I say mirroring, I mean a criminal will always look at you as if you're a mirror. And if that reflection doesn't make sense, it doesn't line up with who they are, they will start asking questions, right?
Makes sense.
If I'm looking in a mirror and my mirror, you know, has a watch on, that's some quality dentistry work, which means he's probably middle class or grew up middle class, that doesn't make sense, it doesn't even drive with criminality in life, doesn't have a broken nose on him, right?
Right.
It doesn't have a part of the no apparent facial scars of him being in fight when he was growing up. That doesn't line up. Then you can go into the clothing aspect. There's a lot of things that kind of deeper and deeper down, right? You didn't smoke? Oh, you're not a smoker? No, I don't smoke. Oh, so you probably run or jog a lot. So you need to work out and have some sort of physicality going on, right? Looking for nicotine stains on fingers and stuff like that is, you know, deeper layers of observation. But again,
right.
I'd always tell this to people. If you want to convince somebody, if you want to lie to somebody with your appearance, you have to realize that they're looking for themselves in you. So you have to fucking start looking at them very closely. Emulation again. You have to find those things. If you don't match up with their reflection, questions will be asked. And if you don't know how to answer,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't know how to lie, you know, that would be kind of dangerous for people. So again, you know, looking for these patterns and kind of knowing how to exploit them also.
I recognize
how it's
broken. You know, the funny thing is we were, Dan and I were down in Florida a couple of years back. And as usual, I wake up really early, go for a run, try to exercise really early in the morning. And I'm running from the hotel and I a few blocks from the hotel, I hit the water, and this is really early in the morning. There was no one on the street. And all of a sudden, I got these two cars coming closer together, set up on different sides of the street. Two guys come out of the first car, two guys come out of the second car. The second car looking typically like either a drugs dealer, like classic, like I'm gonna, you know, kind of semi-cheapo car, I'm gonna sell you whatever I have, right, kind of thing. And then the other car looks like more like a government car. Clearly, the two guys in the government car were, you know, either special operations or SWAT or something along those lines, based on the body language and how they were dressed. And the other guys were supposedly, I'm assuming that was an exercise, were supposedly either drug dealers or whatever, and they were sort of dressed like that. However, what gave them away were the shoes. The shoes were like, yeah, you are a U.S. operator, man. You cannot sell it to me. And it was very clear. And I wasn't even that close. I was probably 50 meters away. Kept on running. You know, I had my kind of turn around, went the other way. But I had enough of a view that I say, hey, this got to be an exercise, or, you know, they're practicing or whatever. Because there's no way these are like drug dealers, whatever. They look like U.S. special operation shoes, right?
And people ask me, like, so how do you work on your operational skills for that? I recognize that type of stuff. So if you're involved in the tactical or training community in any way, shape, or form, you already have all these patterns built into your brain from all the Instagram posts we see, from all the tactical magazines we read. You learn how to recognize brand names, styles of shoes that are coming out, all the tactical bags that have a hidden pocket in them with a gun or a rifle. Of course, all of us are programmed now to kind of recognize all these things. You can apply the same subliminal programming that we came from all these things by doing the same thing with social media, but looking at the other side of it, as you're going, right?
Right.
So, I have a roving group of Facebook and Instagram pages that I follow and I look at, and I do it for a lot of reasons. One, to learn how to recognize what's in fashion and what brand names people are wearing, why they're wearing them. If I spot a certain hashtag that is pretty, you know, prevalent within cartel culture at any time, you know, I kind of follow it and see where it takes it. And yeah, it's the same thing. You learn what these things culturally mean. You see it out there in the street, you see that guy is wearing this brand of shoes, and that's a kind of a new brand of shoes. The types of cartel music that depict the use of this brand of shoes are usually seen the lower cartel guys. So
right.
I'm gonna guesstimate that guy is a wannabe, or he's a real thing, and he's affiliated with this part of the country. And I do that for American law enforcement all the time. They send me things, and I try and help them out with things. And they're like, wow, man, that's some psychic shit you're doing right there. I'm like, oh, it's not at all. You see, you know, I just give them it's like an alphabet. It's once you know the letters, you can start making the words. So if you see this, this, and this on a guy, you add all those together, that guy's probably from this card up. So I have some affiliations and stuff, all right? So it's the same thing we do with our own, you know. You recognize a guy wearing 5'11" jeans in the street, right? or pocket clips, knife with a pocket clip on it, or a guy carrying around inside the waistband. You recognize that stuff because, again, we're doing the same thing criminals do as far as looking for a reflection. We recognize things that in ourselves or in our own kind of background or culture in that individual. So if we kind of switch gears and kind of start following or trying to observe and learn about the other side of the coin, to do exactly the same thing and start recognizing those people as well.
You know, the other funny thing is, you know, I commute to New York, New York City often, and in Grand Central, you had all these, you know, tactical police and U.S. Army, I think it's National Guard, just, you know, doing duty there, and they're pretty obvious who you are. But you also have undercover cops just roaming Grand Central from all the tracks all the way to the subway, and there it is so freaking easy to pick them out. Even in the middle of like rush hour where it's like hundreds of people walking, you can just pick them out in the crowd, and it's so obvious that they are cops, and either they don't care or they don't know any better, right? But it's so obvious. This is from the haircut to the way they walk, to the way they dress, to the way they're looking around. I mean, come on, man. Just don't be so obvious.
The things that I found, especially when selecting people for that type of work, is that you have to go way back to the academy, basically, to get them at a point in their life that they're not contaminated by, you know, bad habits, or good habits, depending on what type of police officers you want them to be in. But if you want to get somebody working in a field where you don't want them to be recognized as a cop, you can't have any of that contamination going on. Having somebody that observes, you have to go really back with them and kind of get them early, I think, you know. I think that's how I learned to pick people myself. And, you know, there's always this tendency to look for, when you hear undercover or when you hear, you know, this guy's going to be, you know, going to blend himself into this environment, and you think, you know, high-level individual operator guy, maybe. I don't know where our mind goes sometimes when people talk about that. But the topic of the gray man always comes up, right? So
right.
Yeah, you have to pick somebody that, you know, kind of melds into the background. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. Every now and then you get some an anomaly, an individual that's very well liked, social player, social engineer, that knows his way around places. You know, the guy that you go to a bar with, and, you know, the waiter knows him, you know, the security guy knows him, that type of personality. And he's very much out in the open in his life. And when you find somebody like that, and then you groom him into, you know, a collective information and observer, for somebody you want to put into an environment that feeds you information.
Right.
He already has most of the parts in him as far as being a social player. And, you know, I always mess around with people and I tell them, like, I don't believe in the gray man. I'd rather believe in the Tijuana Viva, right? So the whole Tijuana Viva thing is because, you know, in Tijuana we have these donkeys painted as Vivas. They're pretty unique. They're pretty weird.
Right.
In most places in the world, you would stare at them if you cross the street, but in Tijuana, nobody even bats an eye when they're there, right? They're normal in the environment. But they're pretty, you know, out there. When you get an individual like that who's a social player, usually that individual has all of the knowledge and education about knowing what the social norms are and the cultural norms are in an environment. So he's not an outcast, you know? Can't have somebody that's an outcast doing the observational stuff for you because he's going to stick out. You know, cops stick out, social outcasts stick out, weirdos that keep themselves will stick out. So you can't necessarily bring, the 50 gray man, the guy's in the back of the room that nobody pays attention to. That's bullshit. You have to have somebody that has has that social aspect to him, that guy that knows how to, that knows what to ask for, knows who to ask, knows what things cost. One cultural aspect that gets missed a lot in conversation like this,
right,
is what things have value in an environment, right? Some things have value in certain environments that you don't know about, right? So, you know, prison system in the U.S., Raymond Noodles are valuable, you know, like currency. Some parts in Mexico that you move into, having certain phone numbers for people within the police force are the equivalent of having the money that will print you cash. Knowing where the sobriety checkpoints are going to be in the city, mm-hmm. Is something that basically will earn you money, right? And some people out there have these numbers because of their social skills, their friendships. They grew up in a place where they got these contacts. And so, as an example, you have these guys that I used to work with that had all these contacts, and the value that they had, or the wealth that they had, was in their phone. The phone was the phone and the numbers they had in that phone, and who they called, and then how they would later on go and repay those people that would answer the phone through alcohol, through women,
right,
through whatever favors they had. You know, it's interesting how basically they had the keys to the matrix, and they would get things done and make things happen in the environment, and they were out in the open. They were very visible. They were very obvious players in the environment. Everybody knew them, and they were working for us.
Yeah,
and they were not blending in, but they knew how to move in that social environment, and basically they were hiding out in the open.
I spent down in southern Lebanon fighting Hezbollah back in the 90s, and given what we were doing there, we got pretty up close and personal with a bunch of villages in the area, and we, you know, were doing reconnaissance and observations and all kind of stuff, and we knew exactly how things were running every day, from who was walking the sheep all the way to how the old people were holding their cigarettes in, you know, each village in a specific way, to the way they were dressing, to the way even the call of prayers were slightly different. And we learned that over time. And one day, I remember we mounted an ambush. We were looking for a higher rank Hezbollah lieutenant. And there, you know, we were hiding and everything, and these guys were trying to pass for people from a certain village to try to go across an area that they knew possibly the Israeli military was operating. And, you know, they went with some of the people, and they're trying to mimic the people, but they failed to realize everything I just said, as I just told you. They failed to realize how to hold a cigarette. They failed to realize how to dress properly. They failed to realize even how to walk. It was they stuck out. I mean, it was very clear that these people didn't belong. So we started observing a little closer, and we realized these are the people we're looking for. And lo and behold, a little short after these people went through, the high value target went by, and we managed to catch him just because their kind of security, you know, fast, you know, whatever, forward operating security team didn't do a good job in mimicking the surroundings. So sometimes little things would just tip you, and little things would just make your life very, very miserable. You know, in your line of work, and the line of work that I was back in the day, is the lack of attention to details that will get you caught, and that is bad.
Yeah, no, that's where the devil is. The devil's in the details. And if there's some people that do this type of work, and they separate themselves from what they perceive to be the enemy, right?
Right.
And usually you'll get that a lot in the military circles, where they vilify or they dehumanize the enemy. I used to get it a lot with some of the Mexican FX forces that I worked with. They would call them mugrosos, which means, you know, dirty people.
Mm-hmm.
They would, you know, dehumanize them. Then they would find a shrine to the, you know, Santa Marta, that was a criminal shrine. They would tear it down. You know, that was their attitude towards them. But they would never kind of sit down and have conversations or kind of, you know, learn, right? There's certainly a lot that they miss when they dehumanize and they just straight down create this barrier of us versus them. I think in any conflict that is the case. Usually when you get people observing and going into this whole observation part of it, and I always tell people, it's not about glorifying or making, you're not going to be best friends with the enemy or anything like that. It's just realizing that they have needs, that they have families, that they have a cultural background like your own. And if you can learn something about them, just by observation, that's one thing. But if you can actually sit down and talk to people in the environment, mm-hmm. and if you can actually, sit down and listen to some of their stupid cartel songs, and kind of listen for certain things in their stupid cartel songs, if you can realize why they like those stupid pointy shoes with the crocodile skins on them, right? your head might hurt for a while, but you learn things, right?
Right.
And if you can have some common ground as far as conversation-wise goes, when you sit down with some of these people, interrogation can be whatever you want it to be. The most amount of information I ever got from any interrogation I did was by knowing what to ask and knowing where these people were from, not by anything else. Some of these things were just as simple as lighting up a cigarette and talking to them about where they're from, and having somebody feeding me information that was on Google
right.
in my ear. Having a finding common ground. But a lot of people close themselves off. I get the tribalism that is part of the programming that a lot of people that go into the military and a lot of people that go into law enforcement and a lot of people that look at themselves as law-abiding citizens or good guys have. But that is basically a voluntary form of blindness that some people get.
That's interesting,
Because if you separate yourself from it and you don't want to look at anything about those people, they're bad people, fuck them. Let's burn them all. Let's bomb them or something. You miss a lot. You really miss a lot. And I think it's dangerous.
Yep.
I think it's very dangerous in a lot of ways.
So, to begin to close this, if you were to name maybe one or maybe two things that are the most important things that you will begin to look at to learn your target, or things that you will consider analyzing or counting on, the main thing that you would do, maybe the two main things that you would do to begin to learn your target, the one thing that would say, hey, if I get this right, the rest it'll follow. What would that be?
I'd say I would have to take a sample. But when I say take a sample of the target, let's say I have a short amount of time to learn everything I need to learn to go to Guadalajara.
Right.
And I have to sharpen my eyes as far as what to observe, who to look for, right? So you take a sample, and you live in an age of technology, so you can take this sample as easy. You don't have to access a top secret database from the government or anything like that. You can do a quick Google search and just look at people that seem that are tied to any criminal group in the environment you're going to travel into, and collect as much pictures as you can of these people. And from all these pictures, take a notebook and start writing down how many times you see genes in the environment, how many times you see certain colors of clothing in the environment, as far as the criminals that are in the pictures are wearing. Are polo shirts a thing? Are long sleeve shirts a thing? Any jewelry apparent? Any symbology as far as religious symbology apparent in the person? Any tattoos? Age groups. What type of ages are usually involved in some of these criminal activities?
Right.
So if I learn to recognize that anybody over 30 is going to be the leader in a group of people that are going to be around this environment, I know who to talk to directly, or I know who to shoot first, if you're into that, right? But you have to take the sample first, right? So it's a very easy way to start building what to look for. You take the sample, you read through it, you jot it down. I like adding all my notes in handwritten notes so I can, there's something I think I remember it better that way. So you take the sample of the environment, all these criminals, and you see all the people that have gotten caught, and then you look at all the leaders that have caught in the area, see what they're wearing as well. So you start building what I like to call an alphabet, right? So you start seeing that all these guys are wearing this type of brand of jeans, and they're usually wearing sneakers, and they're usually white sneakers. It's a fashion statement in this environment. Wearing white sneakers is a sign of wealth. Because if you wear white sneakers, you can't be working in the hills, or you can't be a farmer, because you will get those shoes dirty, and they're a sign of class for the cartels. So when you see white shoes or white sneakers in the environment, that's one letter.
Right.
There's a bunch of 19-year-olds or 20-year-olds with a guy in his 30s that apparently is in charge in an environment that have more than one cell phone. And that's the head of the cell, and all these guys are borrowing his cartel guys, right? Hey, they're all pretty skinny. Okay, so they're probably involved in the security and transportation or guarding the route where these cartel groups move in, and they're just, they're observers. They call through the radio. That means that these guys are probably working on something bigger, and I'm not the target, right? Oh, hey, that guy has a big-ass radio in his hand. And all the guys that get caught with big-ass radios usually don't have any guns on them because they're just used for observation, right? So now you realize that all the guys with that big-ass radio probably don't have guns on them. Right? So now, you start building all these letters. And when you start seeing more than a few of these letters in the environment, you form a word, and that word should be, oh, fuck, I'm into some shit right now, right?
So if
you can find a way to start creating your little environmental sample as far as the enemy, that's a pretty easy way to kind of start building it just with a Google search and a notebook.
Identify the patterns. Identify what makes something either unique or not unique.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And if you find something specific, like a religious icon of any sort, you just go down the rabbit hole and learn. That's kind of how it has to be. It all depends on how much of an investment you have in your security. I mean, I live off this, so I have to be. I think I have to be, on another level when I do this for myself and for people that I work with.
Right.
But things like that, the observation I made about the white sneakers in the environment like that, I never heard anybody talk about it. And it's something that I actually had to go up and ask one of these people in a certain situation, why all the white shoes. And he looked at me and he said, because, farmers are not going to wear white shoes because they're going to get filled up with pig shit. If you have some of these on, it means people work for you. It means you're in charge, right?
Yep.
You're not going to get deported, right? So that is something that I could not have learned from going online, right? Or maybe I could if I had made the observation, but it's been pretty hard. Do I advise people go out there and talk to cartel guys? No. Leave that to stupid people like me, right? But just realize that there's always, there's a lot of small nuggets of information out there and observation things from all sorts of people from all over the world that if you can find these, they start forming letters. It's like learning an alphabet. Once you start learning these letters, you start making words out there in the environment. And you can,
yeah. Once you connect the dots, it's easier to begin to connect even more dots after that.
Yeah, I mean, people always, you know, there's few people out there that accuse me of fear mongering. I'd like to say that I like creating students that are paranoid, but I like having students that have an educated paranoia, right? So if they're going to be paranoid about something, I want them to be educated about what they're paranoid about.
I'm into that.
That's a good guy. Yeah, I like having an educated paranoia.
Cool. Ed, we're reaching out 45 minutes in already. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, ask a little bit about the courses you're making and where are you making them, or anything else, where would they go find you?
I'm all over social media. Look at Ed's Manifesto on Instagram, on Facebook. Edmanifesto.com. I'm writing for Skillset Magazine every now and then, and for Recoil Walk Good. And you can find some of my stuff on there as well. And I'm reachable. Just reach out to me through those sources.
Cool. Well, next time you're in New York,
and end of January, right?
Is it end of January?
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
All right. Then margaritas on me, man.
Oh, you know me too well.
I know.
You already know that pattern about me.
maybe we can record something live in Spanish. And I don't care about anyone else. Nosotros lo hacemos en español y que se caguen todo el mundo.
Thanks. Awesome. Appreciate that.
Definitely. I'm down. Not
with you. Probably easier, yeah. Anyway, Ed, man, thanks so much for coming again to the show and spreading the process of wisdom. I'm gonna get in touch with Matt, and I really want to do that. I want to get the four of us on a conversation about many, many topics, especially about the one that I know Matt is more interested in, is the open. So how things can be open from many directions. I'll let you know how that happened, and we'll make it work for you and Matt, and we'll figure it out.
Oh, definitely. I'd just like to take this chance to thank you guys. This is one of my favorite podcasts. I listen to it all the time. You run one of my favorite blogs out there. I always recommend you to people.
Oh, thank you.
And if listeners out there that haven't read your Red Team Rules, you should get on it. and your bookshelf is amazing. Definitely check out these guys on their blog and their bookshelf. Reading this recommendation is, it's pretty on point.
Awesome.
Definitely something to look at.
More books coming in, man. More books. By the way, you need to write a book, dude. You need to write a book. It's about that time.
I know. I mean, so just between us and your listeners, it's already written. It's just that I don't think it's time yet, but it's already done. I'm just looking for the right time to
use me as your beta tester or forward reader or whatever you want to call it. I'll be glad to help. Cool. Ed, man, have a good rest of the week. Thanks again for coming. This is going to be out tomorrow morning, Monday, so I'll tag you and everywhere so you know where it's up.
Awesome.
All right, cheers, mate.
Thanks, Ed.